Like a backstage pass to the world of fly fishing travel, this is Waypoints, the podcast of destination angling. News and events, helpful travel tips, destination profiles, great stories, and expert advice from some of the most seasoned and experienced names in fishing travel. Waypoints is brought to you by Yellow Dog Fly Fishing Adventures, the industry's number one specialty travel company for the very best insider knowledge, logistical support, and trip preparation. Freshwater or saltwater, international or domestic, Yellow Dog has you covered for your next fishing adventure. And now, your Waypoints host, Yellow Dog founder and director, Jim Klug.
There is no doubt that Cuba is currently one of the hottest tickets in town when it comes to destination angling and saltwater flats fishing, especially for American anglers. Pristine flats, low pressure, and impressive numbers of fish, all in a location that is less than 100 miles from Key West. Well, it's no surprise that Cuba has become increasingly popular for Americans and for anglers from throughout the world. With recent announcements that the U.S. and Cuban governments are, once again, taking steps to improve relations between the two countries, the logistics and intricacies that affect Americans fishing and traveling to Cuba are evolving and changing fast. And while it is likely that things will continue to improve for the future, the current travel landscape remains confusing and unlike any other destination in the Western Hemisphere. When deciding if a Cuba trip is right for you, it is wise to focus on the big picture of what exactly this destination offers. While the flats fishing found throughout the country can indeed be incredible, the biggest reason to visit Cuba may be to see and experience Cuba. This is a country that has seen very little transformation over the past 65 years, a destination that still exists in a kind of time warp where things have changed little since the early 1960s. And indeed, a visit to Cuba is, in many ways, a step back in time, a fishing and travel adventure that offers the chance to spend time in pristine marine ecosystems, meet amazing people, encounter an incredible culture, and, if you're lucky, experience some of the best bonefish, permit, and tarpon action found anywhere in the Caribbean. The story of Cuba and the Cuban people is a complicated one, full of challenges, struggles, hope, accomplishments, and sadness. While all of these things are very much a fundamental part of Cuba's recent history, we're not going to be doing a show on the politics of the Cuban government, nor are we going to dive deep on the geopolitics of the complicated relationship between Cuba and the U.S. Instead, we're going to be talking about Cuba from a travel and fishing perspective, and we're going to answer a lot of the questions that people have about getting to Cuba, the legalities of visiting the country, and what to expect while there. And perhaps the biggest question of all for anglers, is the fishing found in Cuba worth the effort to plan and book a trip? So we're going to spend the next two episodes of Waypoints answering that question and providing the facts, details, and inside information that matter to traveling anglers. In this first of two episodes, our Cuba Chronicles, we'll be talking about what's involved in traveling to the country and the logistical and legal challenges that still have to be navigated. We'll talk about the current state of affairs in Cuba and the reality of what's happening on the ground today. We'll also cover the legalities and regulations, how best to get there, who should go, what to expect when traveling in country, and what we might be able to expect in the years ahead. In episode two, we'll shift gears and focus more on the fishing in Cuba. We'll discuss the individual fishing destinations and locations throughout the country, the species, the best time of the year to fish Cuba. We'll compare the liveaboard operations to the land-based locations. And of course, we'll talk gear, equipment, and flies. I am joined for this two-part series on Cuba by one of the most knowledgeable and experienced Cuba professionals in the entire world of travel. Kristen Tripp is the program director for Cuba for Yellow Dog Fly Fishing, and she has made more trips to Cuba, sent more people to Cuba, and over the course of the past 10 years, learned more about Cuba than anyone in the industry. Kristen has a deep love for the people and the culture of Cuba, and she understands well the challenges involved in sending anglers to a country that is oftentimes described as broken, perplexing, enchanting, and captivating all at the same time. Kristen is a wealth of information and an incredible resource for all things Cuba, and we're excited to have her join us on the show. So, Kristen, welcome to Waypoints.
Thanks, Jim.
It is so great to finally have you on the show. This one has been a long time coming. We've got a lot to cover and a lot to talk about. I am personally so excited for these next two episodes, as Cuba is one of my favorite places to visit and travel in the world. And I know between the two of us, when we've probably done between 40 and 50 trips to Cuba over the years. So a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we're for sure going to break down the intricacies of visiting and booking Cuba, but let's begin with the big, basic, and very simple question that seems to confuse a lot of American travelers, which is, can American citizens currently visit and travel to Cuba?
Absolutely. I get this question from nearly everybody, and the answer is simple. Yes. It's easy, it's legal, and it's as simple as hopping online and booking flights to get there. And working with an agent who knows how to navigate the intricacies of the legal aspects of it. But yes.
So the answer is yes, but there's a caveat there. As long as the trip falls within one of 12 what are called OFAC-defined categories. And I want to ask you about those. But first, what is OFAC? How does that involve itself in this process?
So this is one of the challenging things to navigate associated with Cuba trips. OFAC is a U.S.-based branch of the Department of Treasury, and it stands for the Office of Foreign Assets Control, which is really dull. But nonetheless, it governs how Americans are allowed to interact with countries of which we have sanctions against, Cuba among them.
So it's worth mentioning, and I think this is important, that travel to Cuba, and this is where a lot of people get confused, it's not regulated by the U.S. State Department. They're not involved in this at all. Rather, the regulations, the OFAC regulations, are set and controlled by the U.S. Department of the Treasury and this office called the Office of Foreign Assets Control.
Exactly. And that dictates things like how we spend money in countries which we have sanctions against and how we do business there. And these things are changing very, very quickly as we move through time here, which is great news for the Cubans, but it can be very confusing and complicated for the American traveler navigating the legalities of how to get down there and how to do it properly.
Because it has to be done right. If you want to go down legally and not worry about getting fined by the Department of the Treasury, by getting a letter from OFAC post-trip, by, you know, questionable itineraries or activities, you got to do it the right way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, what's interesting about that is, depending upon who's been our president over the last 8 years, the legal categories have actually shifted and changed. And you and I have both been through the hoops of various different iterations of which category is most applicable. So currently, there's basically two primary categories under which people are able to travel. One is humanitarian. The second is support for the Cuban people. And honestly, those two categories are really what Americans are doing by bringing dollars down to Cuba, spending time with Cubans, and indeed bringing our tips and our tipping money to be able to make change and shift the attitude of Cubans and supply much needed income to them.
That's right. And I want to dig more into that, because there's a big difference between, as you just mentioned, supporting the Cuban people and spending money with the Cuban people and spending money with the Cuban government. And that is a day and night, differentiation there. But before we do that, I think it's, you know, we talk about why travel to Cuba, which, again, it's 100 miles from Key West. It shouldn't be that big of a deal, but it is, and it always has been. And one of the reasons things are so confusing with these categories is because of the recent history with Cuba. And I think, and we'll see how many of our listeners can harken back to like their high school history class and see if they were paying attention. But I want to just review a little bit of recent history, which lays the groundwork for the setting that we're dealing with today in the relationships between the U.S. and Cuba. So let's do a quick review. In the late 1920s through the late 1950s, both during and after Prohibition, Americans would swarm to the casinos and hotels in Havana. The American, you know, tourist trade to Cuba flourished. It was a busy time. These decades are very good for U.S. corporate business, who set up all over Cuba. And throughout the late 40s and 50s, numerous organized crime figures also find a welcoming and safe playground to grow their illegal businesses. There's a great book by T.J. English called Havana nocturne that gets into that. But a fascinating time in Cuba. Great for U.S. corporations and for the U.S. government. Not always great for the Cuban people, but that was kind of where things started. In 1952, Batista grabs power and establishes a government that, again, strongly favors U.S. interests. But in 1959, after 6 years of guerrilla warfare against the Batista government, the revolutionaries triumph when Batista, who's no longer getting weapons at that point from the U.S., flees Havana on New Year's Eve in 1958. You'll remember the great scene in Godfather 2, where everything's crashing down at the New Year's party. And at that point, Fidel Castro assumes power. And in 1960 and 61, things get really complicated because the new Cuban government decides to nationalize all U.S. businesses with no financial redress. The U.S. severs diplomatic ties at that point with the new regime, imposes a partial trade embargo, at which point Cuba quickly turns to a new trading partner. Things continue to get interesting. Their new trading partner, the Soviet Union. In 61, we have the infamous Bay of Pigs invasion. That's when 1,500 CIA-trained and U.S.-backed Cuban exiles attempt to invade from the southern coast of Cuba. Interestingly enough, great fishing area down there in the Bay of Pigs and Las Salinas. After days of intense fighting with that invasion, nearly 1,200 soldiers from Brigade 2506 are taken prisoner when they are theoretically abandoned mid-invasion. The attack ends in disaster, and Castro uses that event to solidify his ties with the Soviets and ramp up policies for the Cuban people to defend the revolution, becomes the new slogan. 62, we have the Cuban Missile Crisis, and things stay pretty bad from that point on for many years. In 1980, the Mariel boat lift. Again, you'll remember possibly the opening scene from the movie Scarface. This is where more than 125,000 Cubans quickly leave for the U.S. when Castro opens the port of Mariel and says, if you're going, go now. And they do. You move ahead to 2000. We have the infamous Elian Gonzalez situation, continuation of hostilities between Cuba and the U.S. Now, 2009 through 2013. Interesting time. We enter a new period of warming diplomacy as Obama lifts several U.S. travel restrictions for U.S. citizens wanting to visit Cuba. In 2015, both countries restored diplomatic relations and reopened embassies, which is a huge deal. In 2016, Obama actually travels to Havana, the first sitting president to visit Cuba since 1928. Another big thing that happens this year, commercial airline flights also resume, the first between both countries and direct flights since 1962. Now, in 2017, President Trump makes the effort to reverse some of Obama's Cuba initiatives, restricting individual people-to-people travel and prohibiting U.S. business transactions with Cuban institutions run by the Cuban military. And this is important. We're going to come back to this later in the show. In 2019, Trump bans most commercial flights, not all, but most, as well as cruise ships from traveling to Cuba. And in 21, just as he's leaving office, Trump issues a parting shot by reinstating Cuba to the U.S. State Department's list of state sponsors of terrorism. This is a big deal because this makes things really difficult for a country. This was a move that Obama had reversed as part of his thaw on Cuban relations. And finally, 2022, the Biden administration, they take steps to once again thaw U.S.-Cuban relations after 4 years of tightened restrictions. Now, these measures today, they remain a work in progress. They're changing continuously, but they do represent an encouraging move for both struggling Cubans and for aspiring U.S. travelers. But we got started this history lesson with the mention of OFAC regulations, the rules that even today dictate travel policies for Americans that want to visit Cuba. So let's get back to that. You were saying that of these 12 OFAC regulations, there are two that apply to anglers, because basically visiting Cuba, it's not as straightforward as it, you know, for Americans, it is for people from other countries. And when people say, well, what category is fishing? Fishing is not a category that's allowed.
That is correct. Exactly.
The two again are.
So the two OFAC categories that are supported by Yellow Dog's itineraries are humanitarian and support for the Cuban people. And each vary a little bit depending upon what the traveling angler ends up doing and which fishery they're visiting in Cuba.
Got it. So technically today, Cuba still remains off limits for general tourist activities, meaning that U.S. citizens currently cannot visit Cuba simply to sightsee or go to the beach or explore without some form of structured itinerary that includes either the humanitarian element or includes direct interactions and support for the Cuban people, correct?
That is correct. And through our experiences in Cuba and the relationships that we've grown and developed there, I actually have a lot of ground contacts and a lot of really qualified guides and people who can help out with additional time in Havana, which also there then build on the support for the Cuban people itineraries. So they're dynamic trips when you book through us.
But the one thing that's interesting and what has evolved over the last years is that you used to have to actually apply through OFAC for special permission in the form of a license ahead of time. That's no longer required. Now, as long as your trip itinerary qualifies under one of the OFAC-defined categories, you simply state that and you're good to go. You just have to have that itinerary that backs it up, correct?
That's right. It's sort of like having your tax records. You're supposed to keep one on file as per U.S. law for 5 years as a record to be able to pull out and reference. Same thing with your Cuba travel itinerary.
And it's worth mentioning that, again, these regulations are U.S. regulations. This has nothing to do with the Cubans or the Cuban government. Do they want Americans to come down?
That's an excellent point, because I feel like a lot of the people who call me are really have a lot of trepidation about going to Cuba and feel like they're going to get in trouble as soon as they get there with the Cuban authorities, and they don't want to end up in a Cuban jail. And I get that. I wouldn't want to end up in a Cuban jail either. But you're exactly right, Jim. These are regulations that are U.S. and our obligations as Americans to fulfill and comply with when we spend our U.S. dollars and make our choices when traveling to Cuba, which has sanctions against it.
And Cuba, I mean, they want visitors. They need visitors.
They love us. They love Americans, and they love what they call their neighbors to the north. I mean, when you talk to Cubans on the street, and you no doubt they will come up to you and either try to make a buck by saying, hey, I'm going to take you over here, or would you like to buy this? They absolutely adore Americans, and they really appreciate the fact that we make the effort to come down.
So the bottom line to that first big question of can Americans travel is that visiting Cuba is not necessarily straightforward for Americans as it may be for citizens of other nations like Canada or the UK. But it is very possible as long as you do it right and as long as you adhere to the OFAC policies and regulations.
Absolutely. And one thing that I'd like to add to that is that those OFAC policies and regulations are changing all the time, which is why when you book a trip to Cuba, you don't want to go with a random agent who is doing their second trip to Cuba or even their third trip to Cuba. I am on the pulse. I have my pulse on Cuba. I read the daily news more so in Cuba than I do for the States. And I'm always on top of the regulations. And we both value how important that is, not only for us as a booking agent, but for our traveling anglers. We operate in the best interest of travelers going down there to make sure that everything is in compliance.
And it's a moving target because things are changing all the time. If you look at the Obama years to the Trump years, to now the Biden years, these regulations are shifting regularly, sometimes
Absolutely.
Monthly, sometimes weekly. And so staying on top of this and staying compliant is super important. But it's an interesting deal. And I know we said we weren't going to get involved in the geopolitics or the political aspects of this. But, you know, there are a lot of American politicians, both Democratic and Republican, who are basically saying, hey, 65 years is enough. We need to move forward. There's great trade opportunities down there. Some of the lead sponsors for normalizing relations with Cuba are Republican senators and Republican members of the House who basically say, hey, let's open it up. Let's stop, you know, ceding this to the Chinese and to other, you know, foreign governments. When they're 100 miles off our shore, you've got 11.5 million people who essentially have nothing, and there's tremendous trade opportunities down there. So I guess, again, not going down that rabbit hole, but the hope is that things continue to normalize and open up for the future.
Absolutely. And indeed, what I'm hearing on the ground, and what if you really dig deep right now, you're going to see is that there is more engagement with U.S. diplomats who are actually making the trips down to Havana to try to strengthen business relationships in every single state with small business entities that are American-based with partners in Cuba to sort of move forward the entire economy in Cuba. It's really in shambles right now. Inflation's super high and they're having rolling blackouts. I mean, it's really a very serious and very difficult situation down there. But what I would add to that is, as a tourist, you're completely isolated from those challenges. The Cuban government really makes an effort to make sure that visitors are insulated from the realities that are actually happening for most Cubans.
Well, and hopefully, you know, for the 11 million Cubans that are down there, things do improve in the future. And so if there's any U.S. senators listening to this podcast, you know, let's make some positive changes and see if we can't move this thing forward. But let's talk about the actual logistics, Kristen, that are involved in traveling to Cuba. And that is how to get down there. And again, it's only 100 miles, shouldn't be that big of a deal. But, you know, regarding flights, can Americans today fly directly to Cuba?
Absolutely. There's tons of flights that are going from Miami direct to Havana. There's some direct routes from JFK, which is awesome. And recently, American Airlines opened a route between Miami and Camagüey, which is a city that's further east, which, depending upon which fishery you end up going to, means that your drive time in Cuba is 2.5 hours as opposed to a 8-plus-hour drive.
And back in like 2016, when commercial flights resumed, that was the first time, as we said, since the early 60s. Prior to that, people that wanted to go to Cuba had to either go through Canada or Mexico. Then all of a sudden, there's all these commercial flights flying not just to Havana multiple times a day from numerous U.S. cities, but to places like Camagüey, as you mentioned. And then under the Trump administration, that gets pulled back. Everything other than direct flights to Havana are suspended, yet
Correct. The
commercial airlines still continued to fly during the Trump years.
They did. And indeed, you know, we also had this little thing called the pandemic, which really derailed travel for all of us, as we well know, and shut down air travel for quite some time. But it has come roaring back with, I think American Airlines alone offers about 6 flights daily between Miami and Havana. So there's lots and lots of different options. Delta Airlines, JetBlue, Southwest, I think even United is currently offering flights to Havana. So there's lots of options. It's quite easy.
And right now, as of like May 2022, there's something like 24 flights a day direct from the U.S. and likely to only increase in the months ahead.
Yep, absolutely.
So currently on these direct flight schedules to Cuba from the U.S., there are multiple airports and airlines, you just mentioned a bunch of them, that offer the nonstop flights to Havana and now back to Camagüey. I think you can fly direct to Cuba from JFK mm-hmm. in Newark?
I believe so, yep.
Where else?
Miami is really the hot spot, and then Fort Lauderdale.
Tampa?
Tampa, although you should talk to me before you book that one.
That could be a little problematic coming back in.
We've heard a few tales about coming back in on to Tampa.
Okay, so maybe avoid Tampa and Southwest.
No offense, Tampa.
And then Houston, I think, as well.
I think that's coming online here soon, yes.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the American Airlines flight that's returned with direct service to Camagüey,
yeah,
which is great. But it is worth noting, as you just said, Kristen, that more Cuban airports will likely open up to U.S. flights in the coming months, so Good news for travelers and for anglers.
If you're flying out of Canada, you can fly directly to this place called Cayo Coco. And a lot of Canadians book and travel to Cuba and have for many years. And they go down and they stay at these all-inclusive resorts, some of which are in some of the best fishing territories that we send anglers. But it's a very convenient flight if you're in Canada. So I know we have a lot of Canadian anglers as well that enjoy that Cayo Coco flight, which puts them smack dab where they need to be in the fishery.
I think our Canadian friends would be just fine if it was difficult for Americans.
I've heard that feedback, actually.
Well, let's talk a little bit about documentation and visas. What's required for someone traveling to Cuba?
You have to have a valid passport, which is pretty common for most of our travelers, but it is important to check the date stamp and the expiration date for your passport. If your passport expires within 6 months of your return date home from Cuba, you should probably look into getting it updated and getting a new passport. your customs agents. It just depends upon who you get. And if you get somebody who's decided that he's going to be a stickler for the day, could derail you. So we like to make sure that that's taken care of. The other thing you need is a visa. And a lot of Americans call me and they say, hey, I need this visa. Like, where's the form? How long in advance do I need to submit this and get approval?
This is the same thing as the Cuban tourist card and the visa. They're one and the same.
I oftentimes reference it as like buying a concert ticket. You hop online once you've booked your flights, and it's very easy to purchase and then have mailed to you in advance of your flight.
And you've got some good agencies that you work with and recommend that can line people up ahead of time. So you're not just showing up at the airport and hoping that the airlines will have it. Although they sometimes do.
They sometimes do. American Airlines has a kiosk. It's going to cost you a bit more to buy it last minute. But there are options to be able to purchase visas in Miami before you board your flight.
And you need to show proof of entry and departure dates in order to receive this visa, right? You have to have your ticket booked.
Correct.
Okay. You also want to have a detailed vetted itinerary that is printed out that shows your travel plans and proof that you are not spending money with the Cuban government. We're going to get, again, more into this in just a moment, but rather your itinerary is focused around supporting the Cuban people. Your itinerary language must support this, correct?
Yes. Oftentimes airlines, actually, when you go to book your flight, there'll be a window that pops up that asks which category of legal travel you are traveling to Cuba under. And you're asked to sign essentially a digital affidavit saying, I recognize I'm going to Cuba, there are regulations, I understand my trip is legal, and I understand this is my responsibility. So we also provide a lot of anglers with a affidavit, which lists all of those categories. So if requested by U.S. authorities, not Cuban authorities, then you have the paperwork in hand to justify and support your legal category under OFAC.
And that's a big deal. And this is where you really come in assisting people, walking them through this process, making sure it's done right.
Absolutely.
And it's worth mentioning that once you return from a trip to Cuba, you're required to keep all of your travel receipts and your itinerary for a period of 5 years. Again, it's kind of like your taxes.
Exactly.
Gotta keep your records.
Yep.
Well, you mentioned one of our favorite topics just a second ago, the pandemic that closed the world. Pretty much everything is reopened at this point, but are there any post-COVID health requirements in place right now for entering Cuba?
The only thing that changed during the pandemic is now there's an online customs form, which you have to fill out no more than 48 hours in advance of your arrival into Cuba. It's a little bit cumbersome. The hardest part is converting it into English, but we walk you through that. Then you receive a QR code. And upon arrival into Cuba, you simply show your QR code either on your phone or hard copy, and in you go.
If they even ask for it.
If they even ask for it.
Yeah. I've been down a couple times this year and they didn't even ask for it, but you have to have it just in case.
You have to
have it. Well, here's another complicated factor, and you can explain this to us. Currency and money for trips to Cuba. Talk about something that changes on like a monthly basis, right?
Absolutely.
Talk to us about, do you bring U.S. dollars? Do you bring euros? How is this working? And I know this is a moving target because the policies change. What does the situation look like today?
Today, it's really easy for us. USD is widely accepted. And as recently as just a couple weeks ago, the Cuban government announced that they would allow for USD deposits in Cuban banks. And that's a real big deal in Cuba. That indicates, again, to some political warming between our two countries, but also, I think, is an effort on the part of the Cuban government to try to stabilize the economy. A couple years ago, I've had anglers who, once they go to Cuba, they want to go back. And a couple years ago, we used to have this awesome, beautiful currency called the CUC, the CUCs.
One of two local Cuban currencies.
Yeah,
to make things a total junk show.
Exactly. The Cuban peso and the Cuban CUC.
The convertible peso.
Exactly. Yeah. So CUCs were dissolved by the Cuban government. They said, we can't do this three currency system anymore and kind of work with USD and kind of work with euros. No. So they got rid of the CUCs. So sorry, folks, if you went to Cuba and you have CUCs and you saved a couple hundred bucks, put them in the scrapbook. Sell them on eBay. I don't know. USD is widely accepted in the preferred currency. They'll also accept euros, clean, unmarked, untorn bills. They're really worried about fraudulent bills these days, which is understandable. And then CUP. You will rarely need CUP. In fact, I'm going to Cuba.
The CUP, the Cuban peso.
Cuban peso. I'm going to Cuba tomorrow, and it'll be interesting for me to be able to see if when purchasing rum or cigars, the Cuban stores will accept USD or are going to be sticklers about the CUP. So that'll be on the next podcast sometime.
And it changes all the time, right?
It changes all the time.
It really does. So you got to stay on top of this and find out. I mean, we've seen it fluctuate over the years where, you know, this given month, they're only taking euros. And then the next month, USD is back in favor. But as it stands right now, big changes, US dollars preferred and widely accepted everywhere.
Yeah.
What's not accepted and what really doesn't work in the country, however, is credit cards.
Credit cards are just not functional. I think it's largely a function of the US banking system. And if they see a charge coming from a Cuban entity, they're going to reject it based on banking regulations, which again, different branch of the Department of Treasury than OFAC, but also very sensitive to seeing the word Cuba on any payment interactions. So we always recommend just bring cash to Cuba, bring extra cash, bring more than you think you're going to need, and just don't rely on those credit cards. They're not likely to work.
But, you know, if I'm in Havana, I'll just run to the ATM, right? No problem.
Good luck.
No ATMs.
You might be able to sell your flip-flops for some funds, but yeah. Outside of that, no, there's no ATMs.
All right. So that's good to know for our travelers. Bring cash. And as you just mentioned, when I go down, I always bring an emergency stash of US dollars just to have. If I don't use it, I'll bring it home. No problem. But if you find yourself in a situation where you wish you had more money or you need more money, there's no other way to get it. So travel with emergency cash at all times. Definitely.
Yeah. Yep.
And then tips. This is another question you get all the time. Do the Cuban guides and the staff and the crews of the liveaboard boats, how do they want to be tipped?
USD, 100%. You know, as recently as 6 months ago, the Cuban government only accepted euros in all their banking. And even then, guides wanted USD.
Big black market for
American
dollars.
Massive black market for goods that are brought in on those airplanes. So when you go to check in for your flights out of Miami, we always highly recommend, and people sort of, you know, gawk when I say, hey, you really want to make sure that you get up extra early and you're in line for your flight out of Miami at 3 hours before your flight.
At least.
And they go, really? Seriously? 3 hours? Absolutely. And sure enough, you show up and you've got a line that's all the way out the front doors of the airport for your check-in for Cuba. And every single Cuban that's getting on that airplane has 8 pieces of luggage that are all these balls wrapped in plastic, maybe a couple TVs.
Car tires
for sure. Yeah. They've got half of Costco that they're trying to bring down with them.
It looks like there was a run on Costco and everybody's trying to put it on the plane. Absolutely.
Exactly. So it just is a timely process. You know, the biggest thing when you're in line for those airplanes is you're already in Cuba when you're standing in line there. You're already experiencing a window into where you're going and the need for American goods. These guys are bringing down stuff to family members, for businesses. They're all paying taxes and baggage fees and everything else, but they are making it work. It's a pretty special place and a really special experience to be able to even just have some conversations with some of the Cubans in line.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about safety in Cuba, because I know this is a question that a lot of potential travelers always ask. Is Cuba safe for tourists and for anglers compared to other saltwater and international destinations? Where does Cuba fall in the rankings of overall safety and security?
Cuba is hands down one of the safest places you can travel anywhere in the world. That's largely due to the Cuban government having a zero tolerance policy with any Cubans as it relates to any transgressions against foreigners. Zero tolerance, i.e., you're going to jail and staying there if you decide to try to rob somebody. The other thing is, you know, Cuban society being by default of being communist for so long, they really do take care of each other and they have a tremendous respect for people and for one another and for people who are traveling. They want tourists to keep on coming. And it's as if the grand majority of the country in Cuba recognizes that if there's something that hits the news about a Cuban who took advantage of a tourist outside of making an extra dollar here or there, that they really don't want that to happen. They want the friendship to continue to grow.
That's a good point. And I think a lot of people have concerns about that just because there's so much that's unknown about Cuba. But overall, and certainly with the vast lineup of international destinations that Yellow Dog offers, I mean, Cuba is at the very, very top of the list for safety and security.
Absolutely.
You know, you still have to be smart as a traveler. There's no question about that. Overall, it's incredibly safe.
Yeah. And,
you know, I think, as you said, the note about the Cuban people is a really big one there, for sure.
Absolutely. Now, that's not to say if you're not out late at night and you're flaunting $100 bills all over the place that all your money will be gone in the morning. I guarantee it will be. They will figure out a way. But it won't be because somebody, you know, corners you in an alley. It'll be because they got hustled. They got it out of your pocket.
You drank too much of it in a club and parted with your money. That happens.
And that's okay.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, and we mentioned this a moment ago, what's called the Cuban blacklist. And this is important when you're in country and with planning your trip and with your itinerary. The U.S. government has what they call a blacklist of Cuban businesses that Americans must avoid working with or specifically spending money with when traveling to Cuba. And the list is actually quite large, but this list is comprised of Cuba's kind of government-run hotels or businesses or state-owned enterprises that are connected to the Cuban military, correct?
That is correct. So that's why you really want to make sure you're booking with the right agent as well. We vet the hotels that we send our anglers to stay in and make sure that they're not on the blacklist. And again, the blacklist is from OFAC. So it's a U.S. regulation, right? The Cubans don't care where you stay. They're happy to put you wherever you want to pay for. But we are very careful to make sure that we do not put our anglers in any of those blacklisted properties. And the other aspect of that, Jim, is that, and you know this, I mean, the process is so old school down in Cuba, you still have to get hotel vouchers and present those upon check-in, hard copies. Like if you say, hey, I've got a reservation code. Did you want to see my reservation confirmation
my QR
email?
Code on my phone?
Exactly. That's not going to get you a room.
No.
So you have to have a voucher to check in for your hotel room. And if you don't, you're probably going to pay out of that emergency cash fund for your room for the night if they have space, but it'll take you some time. So it's important that you not only make sure that you're booked in a hotel that is not on that blacklist, but that you tee it up in advance. I help do that for all my anglers, and that you get a hotel voucher that you can print and bring down with you when you go.
And over the years, you've put together a really great collection of private accommodations, things such as apartments, Airbnbs, private homestays, known in Cuba as casas particulares. Mm-hmm. For restaurants, you definitely want to stick to the private paladars, the restaurants, the family-owned operations, and to get around using private guides, taxis, entrepreneurial, you know, private operations down there, which all of these things collectively are really the epitome of support for the Cuban people.
Absolutely. And they're moving the needle again for the Cubans, not for the government entities.
Super important.
Absolutely.
Well, packing restrictions in Cuba. Now, there are some things that you want to avoid bringing down for sure that you have to be careful about that when you're packing. I mean, it's not like going to Belize or the Bahamas or Mexico where, you know, electronics and different things like that are no big deal. Let's talk a little bit about that. What are some of the things you want to avoid packing to stay out of trouble down there?
Yeah. Sat phones, GPS devices, those are totally illegal. If you bring those in and they find them, you're going to sit there for 2 or 3 hours as they document each piece, and they have a witness to document it, and they write it all down, and they try to figure out when you're leaving so they can give it back to you. It's a nightmare.
It's a hassle.
It's a total hassle. And really, it's unnecessary. You know, most sat phones and most GPS devices don't work down there anyway because Cuba's not covered with their plans. Drones are an absolute no-go as well.
Don't even try. Bad idea.
Terrible.
But personal computers, laptops, cell phones,
not a problem.
Cameras, other devices that you normally travel with, totally fine.
Totally fine. Yeah. Yep. It's worth mentioning Cuba is not 420 friendly. So while we are starting to thaw our rules in this country, it can be easy to be like, yeah, no problem. I can bring that aboard. No, no, no.
Drugs, no way, no how.
Zero tolerance.
Zero tolerance down there. And again, you do not want to end up dealing with the Cuban authorities for a drug offense or anything else. It's just, you know, just avoid it.
Absolutely. Avoid it. And if you're one of my clients, I don't know that I want to be involved in trying to figure out how to get you out of Cuban jail.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about how friendly the Cuban environment is for visitors, but it's still a police state.
Absolutely.
And you do not want to cross certain lines. Drones, drugs, satellite devices, just leave them at home.
Exactly.
And don't even take the risk.
Now, some things that I get a lot of questions about are like prescriptions or people who are dealing with cancer treatment and need to take a lot of medicines. All of those things, and even in greater quantities, are totally fine to be able to bring into the country. Oftentimes, if something's a strong opiate or something like that, that somebody needs to take, well, it's important I know about it anyway for safety reason and make sure that you're not a fall hazard. But you just need a doctor's note to be able to bring that in.
Gotta have it documented.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's good. Good to know. Good information. One of the questions we also get a lot is people want to go down and they want to do the structured week-long fishing trip. But is it possible to add extra days and nights, say in Havana or Trinidad or other places like this, other parts of Cuba?
Absolutely. And I've got all the infrastructure and architecture and the right people in place to be able to add on days. You know, I know that you've got an upcoming trip and you've done this before where you've ventured over to Vinales, to the UNESCO World Heritage Site, where they still use traditional farming methods to grow most of the tobacco. And some of the world's best tobacco comes from that particular valley. And it's gorgeous, you know. We highly encourage that to add on to the cultural experience of a Cuba trip. It's not just for the fishing. That's not the only reason you should be going. And I think that that's an important clarifier as well, is that, you know, Cuba's challenging. You have to be open and ready for the third world experience.
Patient
and go with the flow, you know. Okay, they don't have Coca-Cola here. Well, they're not going to have Coca-Cola. It'll be the Cuban version of cola, which is delicious, by the way.
Like 8 times the amount of sugar.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But they may not have it at the next place.
Right.
So you just go with the flow and have an easygoing attitude and enjoy it. But extra time is not a problem to arrange. I've had trips where wives have come down who are not anglers and spent an entire week with their husbands before their husbands go off for a week of fishing. Not that husbands and wives couldn't switch that if they.
Yeah, we've had it the other way too.
Yeah, had.
The husbands get left behind and the wives go
that's
fishing.
Right. Yeah. But yes, extra time is absolutely an opportunity, and we can arrange for tours all over Camagüey to Trinidad, anywhere.
And again, the key thing there is it needs to be included in the itinerary with the right language and vetted in that it's supporting the Cuban people in any of these side trips or side travels.
Yep. And the way that I book that also qualifies in the support for the Cuban people, because I have Cuban friends who facilitate these add-ons for my clients, and they do a great job.
Private operators.
They take great pride in what they do for our anglers.
That's right. If I'm going down, and answer this, Wi-Fi access and cell phone coverage.
Oh,
am I
going
to be able to check my email whenever and wherever I want? Will my cell phone work everywhere?
No.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Havana, you can connect. There's a Cuban Wi-Fi system, and you get these silly little Wi-Fi cards and you scratch this code off.
It's like the old AT&T calling cards.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's got like 82 digits that you then have to copy into the phone every single time you want to connect to the Wi-Fi. And then it kicks you off 2 seconds later. So yes, technically you can connect. Is it reliable? Is it predictable? No. And outside of Havana or outside of the land-based resorts, on the liveaboard boats, forget about it. Best just to say, hey, I'm going to be off the grid for the week and enjoy that. There's very few places in the world anymore you can go where you can be off grid. So,
right. I mean, that digital detox for a week is so nice.
It's so critical.
Yeah. So don't be afraid to just turn the devices off. You can check in with home if you need to. It's a little bit of a process. One thing we always tell people, be really careful with your cell phone. You land in Havana, you power your phone back up, it'll connect. You might even be able to take and receive calls. Likely you will in the city, But these Cuban roaming fees can be kind of legendary, and they can get you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got to be really careful of that with cell phones. So, Kristen, as you were saying, maybe a good idea just to disconnect for a week and be in the moment.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. There are some Cuban cell phone plans that apparently you can now buy into, but I don't think that that's necessarily a good fit for most of our travelers. Some U.S. entities do have coverage in Cuba, and you can go to them and say, hey, Verizon, I'm going to Cuba. Can I buy an international plan for my trip? And they will be able to do that. But again, it's not really worth it. You're only going to have it in Havana anyway. Coverage on the boats. So just turn it off. There Check go. Out.
Good advice anywhere for sure. What about trip insurance and medical evacuation insurance for a trip to Cuba? Is this possible? Is it offered?
It is offered. And in fact, I tell everybody that they should be purchasing it. Trip insurance is really the only financial recourse you have if something goes awry. And, you know, I've had a lot of travelers who have headed down there end up with pretty tight connection in Miami and a fluke storm that rolls through, delays all their flights. They miss boarding the boat and they are out for the week. And that can really hurt, you know, when you lose out on a $7,000 trip just simply because you didn't invest in a trip insurance policy and weather got in the way. It stinks. It really stinks. And it stinks for us too, you know? So yes, trip insurance, highly recommended. Wouldn't bother going to Cuba without it. Medical evacuation is also a possibility, 100%. In fact, we've worked with a number of the medical evacuation providers in order to clarify the best logistics and keep them up to date on the best logistics, given changing circumstances, as we mentioned earlier. Yeah, you should definitely have that in place.
Good advice right there. So get both of those policies for sure. Well, let's say I'm going to go down to Cuba and I'm going to try to save some money. I'm not going to do one of the bigger packages. And we're going to get, by the way, into all of the different location options and the different fisheries and destinations in episode 2 of these Cuba Chronicles. But just quickly, let's say I'm going to go down and I don't want to spend the money. I'm just going to DIY fish. I'm going to just figure it out on my own and try to explore once I get there. How hard is it to get around in Cuba? I mean, can I simply rent a car or hop on a domestic flight to go across the country and easily move around?
No, you are going to a broken country that is at least 50 years behind in development. There are no in-country flights right now in Cuba. All of the Cuban national airlines are all owned by the government. During the pandemic, they actually put it out in the news and said, sorry, we don't have the financial resources and everybody's been told to stay at home. So all of our airplanes have received no maintenance for the better part of the last 2 years. So even if they were in the air, I would be remiss in booking anybody or trying to get anybody on an airplane. So forget about it. It's not even an option. There's no in-country flights in Cuba.
I'll just go to the Hertz counter then and rent a car.
Yeah, because that's going to work out real well. Right now, there's fuel shortages all over the country and rations. So renting a car is not a great idea. The best way to go, again, is to support your Cubans through the Support for the Cuban People itinerary. Book things in advance. Have a driver. Hire a driver. Have a guide if you're going to try to DIY. However, I would say DIY on the tour stuff. There's no DIY fishing in Cuba. It's illegal. You know, you might see some Cubans out there fishing, but they are fishing either as part of the Cuban government. They have to catch their fish and share their fish with their community. But DIY fishing is not an option. It's not a thing.
Yeah.
Nope.
And the other thing that a lot of people don't realize, and we're going to talk more about this in the next episode as well, is just how big Cuba is. It's a massive island. It's not like you're going to Little Cayman and you'll just kind of bop around the island and figure it out and find some stuff on your own. I mean, this is a huge, huge island, and these fisheries are really spread out. They're in totally different locations. They're pretty far apart, and oftentimes they're off the main island offshore.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to traveling in Cuba. Tell me about the food. What can people expect? This is a question we get a lot. What's the food like in Cuba?
Well, in Havana, you've got some excellent restaurant and dining opportunities. And really, you can have some incredible food experiences in Havana. despite
are those government or private?
Both. The government ones are not as good.
Yeah.
You can taste the flavor. It's a difference. I highly recommend going to certain restaurants and, you know, if you want to order the dish of the house, the ropa vieja, which literally translates into old clothes, but is a slow cooked meat with peppers. It's not spicy. Cuban food is not spicy. A lot of people think it's going to be rice and beans and super spicy food. That's not the case. But that's a tremendous opportunity in Havana. When you get further afield and when you're staying at some of our land-based operations where we send anglers, you're going to be in an all-inclusive resort with a cook who's going to try his hardest to cook stuff that's delicious, but probably hasn't worked with those ingredients at home. And so kind of misses the mark a lot. So I travel with lots of snacks. I always bring, you know, meat sticks or protein bars. And then I always make sure that I've got, you know, those on standby, maybe some instant oatmeal as an alternative if breakfast doesn't look very good. And you just maintain an attitude of flexibility.
Yeah. I mean, if you're, you know, if culinary experiences are on the top of the list outside of Havana, you might be disappointed.
True.
Although with the liveaboards.
With the exception of the liveaboard boats, the food on the boats is really stellar. It, you know, in the past it was fairly marginal, but these days they've really stepped it up and the food is really,
it's gotten really good.
It's really good.
Yeah. Especially fresh seafood. I mean, amazing dishes.
Absolutely.
Well, one question, people like to bring down items to leave behind in Cuba for the staff or for the guides. This is a great question. What kind of things do you recommend if people want to bring some stuff down to leave behind?
Yeah. As of late, I have gotten lots of requests for things like sunblock, and sunglasses, kids clothing, kids shoes. It's really hard to find those items down there and they're very expensive. Of course, electronics like cell phones, even laptops, you know, if you've got an old one and it's wiped, then it's worth, and it's unlocked, it's worth bringing it down there if you care to get rid of it. You know, really they are grateful for anything that you're able to bring down and leave behind. But as of late, those have been the highest requested items.
How about bringing items back from Cuba? What are the current regulations in place if I want to go down and bring back, you know, a couple boxes of cigars, some great Cuban rum, some souvenirs? What's allowed?
Unfortunately, and you mentioned parting shots across the bow from Trump, in 2020, he made it illegal for Americans to bring rum and cigars home. However, you can enjoy as much rum and as many cigars as you'd like while you're down there.
All right. So good to know. Be smart about those regulations.
Be smart about that. Exactly.
Especially if you're flying commercial, coming back into some of the major airports, you're getting off the flight from Havana. They know that that might be the first question they ask.
Yep.
And they'll be happy to confiscate your, you know, Partagas number fours and your Havana Club rum.
Yes, exactly.
All right. So good to know. Well, here's a question for you as far as someone who books hundreds of clients a year into Cuba, Kristen. And it's a simple question. Who should go on a Cuba trip? What kind of angler is right for Cuba as a destination?
Somebody who is excited to experience the culture and the place and who can go with the flow. If you are an easy traveler who doesn't mind, you know, being flexible, then it's fantastic. The flats and the fisheries in Cuba are some of the most pristine we've seen anywhere in the Caribbean. It's not to say that it's easy fishing. It's not always a give me. It's still saltwater fly fishing, but it's pretty spectacular. And it really offers you a rare opportunity to be able to see the Caribbean, perhaps how some countries were 100 years ago, 125 years ago.
Well, I think that what you mentioned about the fishing is important. It's not Disneyland where it's going to deliver A+ off the charts week after week after week. You're going to have some stellar weeks with, you know, arguably some of the best tarpon fishing and permit fishing, big bonefish you find anywhere. But you also have average and difficult weeks. I mean, it's saltwater fishing. So
That's
you
right.
have to be able to roll with that. I think it's also really important. And what you just touched on is that going to Cuba, the fishing, well, that may be the catalyst for why you do the trip. It's really only a part of the overall experience. You know, really it's the people, the music, the rich and historic culture, that, you know, kind of the lure of experiencing Cuba in its original and raw form, that that's the reason to go. And I would add that, you know, the Cuba that you see today is likely to be very different, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now. So
absolutely.
That's why you go.
You go, and you go sooner as opposed to later. It certainly is a bucket list trip. And in a lot of ways, you know, when you go, if you bring a mask down and a snorkel, and I know that's like unheard of for a lot of anglers, but gosh, take a break at lunch and go flip around in the surf and over the reef over lunch break. You will not believe the diversity of coral species and health of the reef ecosystem out there. It really offers a vision of hope, to be honest with you, in an interesting place that seems somewhat hopeless from a humanitarian aspect. It's really pristine and gorgeous. So it's not for everybody, but it's a fantastic destination if you're up for the adventure. And as you said, up for the experience with Cubans. And you have a level of flexibility and you thrive on that and enjoy that.
Well, I want to wrap things up on our first of two episodes here, Kristen. I want to give you the chance to quickly promote your services for Cuba and tell listeners why they should book their Cuba trip through you and your program at Yellow Dog.
No pressure, right?
No pressure. Here's your moment to tout your services.
Well, I think it really speaks for itself. I mean, you know, we've been doing this perpetually and for longer than any other booking agent out there. I've arguably sent more anglers to Cuba than any other agent in fishing in the last 10 years. We have fished everywhere, including fisheries that are not open or did not open. And we really, I think I speak for both of us. We love Cuba. It's one of our favorite destinations. It's worth the challenges to get there. It's worth it. We really love it. So we want to keep sending people down there.
Well, it is a special place. And I would add that, you know, if you're planning to travel to Cuba, especially if it's your first time, it is highly recommended that you enlist the services of a travel agency and a specialist that really knows the ins and outs of Cuba. You want that experience. You want that insider knowledge, that comprehensive on-the-ground support, that detailed pre-trip information, and, of course, you know, the correct itineraries and the legalities that go along with adhering to the OFAC regulations. Super, super important. Another thing to think about is, you know, if you're a single angler or there's a couple of you, consider joining a hosted trip. You know, that's a great way to go down. I know you personally host several a year. Other Yellow Dog team members host a number of trips to Cuba. It's a great way to experience Cuba for the first time.
Absolutely. You know, and I think one of the things to just finish up here is when somebody goes to Cuba, it's nice to know that you've got somebody in your corner who speaks Spanish, who knows the country in and out, and who has the contacts to be able to help you if something goes south. And I heard that direct feedback from a couple of anglers who went down during the pandemic. And that was really meaningful and touching to me. And I think it really speaks to why you should book with Yellow Dog and book a trip with me, to be honest. It's hard for me to say that, but
well, there
it's
you go.
True.
No, that's good information. Well, Kristen, this has been great. And of course, we're going to continue the conversation in part two, the next episode of our Cuba Chronicles, where we'll dive into the details of the fishing, the different location options and fisheries, seasons, species, tackle, and much more. But that's it for this episode of Waypoints, the podcast that is 100% dedicated to travel and the search for adventure. Be sure to visit yellowdogflyfishing.com to plan and research your next fishing trip and stay up to date on the latest travel news and developments. You can also visit the Waypoints podcast archives for dozens of previous episodes that cover the amazing world of destination angling. Join us for our next episode of Waypoints. And remember, life is short and no one ever regretted a life of adventure.
This has been another episode of Waypoints, the podcast of fly fishing travel and adventure angling. Waypoints is produced by Brian Gregson, with music provided by the Steep Canyon Rangers. Visit yellowdogflyfishing.com for more destination profiles, travel news, and expert advice, and be sure to join us for our next episode.